Before the episode begins, we'd like to tell you about Impulse, meeting health pioneers. Impulse is the podcast where you will discover the latest advances in the medical field through conversations with the brightest minds changing how care is delivered. From the rehabilitation of paraplegics having lost the ability to walk, to revolutionary contraception methods for men, the podcast covers current and future wonders of medicine that are or will be transforming healthcare. Your host, Mathieu Chaffard, eagerly awaits you, so don't hesitate and go listen to fascinating episodes about medical advancements. You are listening to Science for Care. I am Anka Petre, and this show unveils the stories behind some of the most important scientific and medical breakthroughs of our time. Surgical robots, when science fiction becomes reality. What was once science fiction is now reality. This pretty much sums up the history of surgical robotics. Now, before you panic, let me define what they are. Surgical robots are not living and breathing machines capable of taking medical decisions alone. That is still science fiction. The reality is that surgical robots are mechanical arms with surgical instruments attached to them that are guided by surgeons. I know, this description takes away from the fantasy, but wait until you hear about the incredible things they can do. In today's episode, we will explore how scientists and engineers put their imagination to work and created highly sophisticated robots capable of assisting surgeons in the OR. I will give you a couple of mind-blowing examples, and you will even get to hear from a specialist in this field. The term robot was first used in 1921 in a play published by Karel Čapek. It is derived from the Czech word robota, which means laborer. The play is a satire written to protest against the rapid emergence of technology. Little did he know that he had just coined a term that would be used to describe a technological revolution. Although the word robot only appeared in the 20th century, the idea of robots dates all the way back to antiquity. Through the centuries, there are countless descriptions of mechanical imitations of animals or automated figures. But it wasn't until 1985 that the first surgical robot was created. It was called Puma, and was a simple articulated arm that was used for needle placement in a brain biopsy. The field gained in popularity as it brought the promise of minimally invasive surgeries and therefore fewer postoperative complications. In the 80s, NASA engineers and Stanford surgeons came up with the idea of telepresence for surgeons. Instead of having them operate the instruments above a patient lying on an operating table, the surgeons could work mechanical arms equipped with surgical instruments from another location. The concept was introduced to the Pentagon with the aim of allowing surgeons to treat wounded soldiers on the battlefield from a remote and safe location, with the surgeon's hands controlling robotic arms on the battlefield. In 1995, Intuitive Surgical was formed. The company purchased the licenses to part of these technologies and developed the world-famous Da Vinci robotic surgical system. The Da Vinci is equipped with several arms that can replicate a surgeon's movements with extreme precision. I'm not gonna lie, it is pretty scary to see this big machine on top of a patient. It reminds me of Dr. Octopus, the villain in Spider-Man that has a set of four evil articulated arms. But enough with science fiction. The Da Vinci surgical system is made of a remote surgeon's console and mechanical arms. From the console, the surgeon has a three-dimensional view of the operating field and can remotely control the instruments. So, there is no risk for the articulated arms to suddenly attack the patient. Again, science fiction has its limits. In a little less than 40 years, incredible breakthroughs were made. But who better to talk about them than an absolute expert in this field, Jeffrey Alvarez, Chief Strategy Officer at Moon Surgical.
Back in the 1980s, computing power was very limited, and there was only certain things that we were able to do with robotics. But a lot of scientists and innovators and doctors came together, and one of the key technologies that arrived was in the early 90s, and it was a research program out of SRI that gave birth to what today is the Da Vinci robot. And the Da Vinci robot, if you know, is made and commercialized by a company called Intuitive Surgical. And this company was founded in 1995, back when I was a young kid. And it has done nothing but excel in the marketplace. And what's fascinating is that platform has had a number of iterations and continues to make great progress in certain surgical procedures, and doctors absolutely love it. It allows them to have control over all their instruments. It gives them fine control intraoperatively while they're suturing. It gave them stereoscopic vision, so where they once only had two-dimensional vision on a screen, now they had depth perception. It was revolutionary. And, you know, standing here today, it's fascinating because everyone has looked at Da Vinci as an incredible success, and it gave birth to an entire industry. So today there's over 340 different surgical robotics companies out there. Now, they're not all in the same space, and they're not all the same types of configurations. But over 100 of them are focused in abdominal surgery, where Da Vinci practices and is focused, and urology. And it just shows you the precedence that Da Vinci has set and the appeal for new entrants to come to that market. I mean, Da Vinci, its revenue last year was $5 billion, right? And it only has about 10,000 employees. So that's 500, that's $500,000 per employee. It's a fantastic business. And everyone wants to get into that game. And so, you know, people have been working on the abdominal surgery, and then you've seen kind of a development of more niche types of robotic systems. These are systems that might be developed for things like orthopedics or spine surgery, but they're very focused on specific procedures. They're not as broad of a surgical platform as I think we all would like. And I think that's really how the industry has evolved. You see these telemanipulation systems where the surgeon is kind of in the corner and commanding a robot to follow his motions and do aspects of the procedure. And then you have these niche types of systems where they might be commanding the robot directly. They might be pre-programmed or automated. But it's evolved into kind of these two paradigms of platforms.
But what if I told you that robotic surgery can be taken a step further in a direction in which the limit between reality and science fiction becomes blurry?
AI-driven surgery, we've heard a lot about that over the last 15 years, really. And it's arrived because of innovations in computing power around graphics processing units that really gave birth to convoluted neural networks and machine learning and AI. And so it quickly made sense to start looking at how do we integrate these types of capabilities into robotic systems. I mean, you have very smart algorithms. Why not combine it with a very smart machine and allow that machine to do things? And so in robotic surgery, a lot of the focus has been how do we help the surgeon? How do we inform them? How do we guide them? How do we allow them to make decisions faster with almost less information? And this becomes especially important as you look at the U.S., for example. You know, the hospitals are so dispersed. You have rural community centers. You have surgeons that may only do a certain procedure once or twice a month. And they're not as proficient and experienced as someone at a major metropolitan center that does 20 or 30 a month. And so how do you level that out? How do you allow that rural surgeon, not doing as much volume, to be at the level of that experienced surgeon? How do you augment them with enhanced capabilities and guide them with AI? And so that's been the goal with a lot of AI in robotics. And, you know, we've seen an immense amount of investment in it. Really, as you look at the landscape, there's been, there was obviously Da Vinci in the late 90s and commercialized in the early 2000s. And then very quickly after that, you had another kind of tranche of platforms that came out that didn't have any AI capabilities. They were all kind of Da Vinci chasers. And now there's this next round of platforms, things like CMR's Versius, we've got Hugo, and they're very focused, and Johnson & Johnson's Ottava, they're very focused on how do we bring in this data element? How do we bring in this digital surgery element to enhance capabilities? And, you know, these are cash-rich companies. They've invested a ton into it, and it's challenging because you have to develop the right hardware to get the right signals and the right sensors to be able to build the right algorithms to make the right decisions. And you have to do it in a way that is simple for that surgeon, that really helps them and creates a real value without overwhelming them. You don't want to just give them a bunch of data. They'll not know what to do with it. And so surgery, I think, will evolve in the presence of AI, but I think it's taking longer than everyone expected.
To better understand this new field, let's take the example of the Maestro robotic system developed by an innovative company called Moon Surgical. The Maestro is a two-armed robotic surgical assistant that can hold and manipulate standard laparoscopic instruments. Laparoscopic. It comes from the word laparoscopy, which is used to describe a type of surgical procedure that allows a surgeon to access the inside of the abdomen and pelvis without having to make large incisions in the skin. Laparoscopy allows the observation of the various digestive, genital, or urinary organs. Various pathologies can be diagnosed and even treated without having to open the abdomen. If you have had your appendix removed, chances are the surgeon use this technique instead of cutting you open. When you think about it, it is quite mind-blowing.
When you look at laparoscopy, it's evolved so much over time, and Da Vinci has had a role in that as well. You know, in the 1980s, before that, a lot of things were open surgery. You'd go into the operating room, they'd have to slice you open with a big incision, you know, open you up, and the surgeon's grabbing their organs with your hands, gloved hands, luckily. And it's very traumatic, right? And like the recovery time for that was substantial. And so these group of surgeons started getting together and said, hey, why not do it through these little ports, these little cameras and these little instruments? And that gave birth to laparoscopy. Actually, a lot of it was done here in France with professor here. And it was interesting because it was hard to learn. It took a lot of practice for that surgeon because it was a new technique. And one of the main elements of that is you had to now start to work through three or four different instruments through three or four different ports. And that meant you had to disperse that control of these things to other people in the operating room. Now, surgeons like control. They're responsible for that operating room and everything that goes on in there. And they have to have people that they trust. And that became a challenge because, you know, if you go in the operating room today and watch laparoscopy and you watch some of these things, there's a little bit of tension because the surgeon wants the camera in a specific spot. There's not enough retraction on the liver. It's not being held up enough by this assistant that's helping them. And so that's where Da Vinci also played a big role in its capability. You know, it'll restored some of that control to the surgeon, allowed them to sit down at this console, again, you know, removed from the surgeon in the corner. But now they had control of the endoscope, and with a quick click of a pedal, they could control all these other instruments. And so, you know, that was one of the big value points of Da Vinci, that and why surgeons like it so much. But it has its trade-offs, right? The surgeon is no longer sterile. They're removed from the operating room. They don't have the situational awareness and know what's going on around the patient, what their team is doing. And when things happen that aren't expected, which happens a lot in surgery, no two surgeries are the same, it doesn't adapt well, right? You have to, it's hard to move things around. It's hard to know if things are colliding. And so those are some of the challenges. So that's what's most exciting, I think, about Moon is we've really identified this need for how do you have a system that can adapt to almost any situation in the operating room? How do you allow that surgeon to return to the practice of surgery that they trained on? You know, it takes 9+ years to train a general surgeon in the U.S. And we can't then say, okay, now you finished all your training, doctor. Now we need to send you to like another program to learn how to do robotic surgery and set up a system and, you know, move all the instruments. Like it's not sustainable. We need technologies that allow us to do more with less. And that's what we're focused on. How do we deliver a simple, high-value system that gives them more capability with the tools and training and techniques that they have today?
I was always convinced that the boundaries between science fiction and science were very clear. I mean, science is based on observation, testing, and rational actions, whereas science fiction is purely based on imagination. But today's episode forced me to reconsider my position. Much like in science fiction and superhero movies, robotics are giving surgeons incredible powers that benefit millions of patients. In fact, science fiction is a great source of inspiration for scientists and engineers across the world. Science fiction encourages us to keep on pushing the boundaries of science and technology, and the boundaries of what human beings can achieve. It is both terrifying and incredibly exciting. But aren't these the main features of disruptive innovation anyway? Science for Care is a podcast by Health Tech for Care, a nonprofit organization designed to support and promote access to care for all. If you enjoy our show, please mention it to your friends, family, and coworkers, and leave ratings and reviews on your favorite listening platform.